My daddy has lots of books, and he likes to read books. And he interviews authors at KAZI. You are now going to listen to KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay.
And it's 12:31 p.m. and welcome to KAZI Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, coming to you every Sunday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. and every Monday from 8 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. with interviews with authors of the latest in fiction and nonfiction. On today's edition of KAZI Book Review, we're going to open up with a live interview with Elizabeth Schwartz. She is the author of Before I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay and Otherwise. She's an attorney in Florida who has worked for over 20 years with helping the LGBT families create and dissolve relationships in a hostile legal environment. And joining me as their KAZI Book Review contributor for the very first time to help me with the interview is Jennifer Rich. She is the author of two novels, with the third novel about to come out. She is the author of The Crossing, published in 2010. I Too Have Suffered in the Garden, published in The Crossing was published in 2013. And I Too Have Suffered in the Garden, published in 2010, which features three gay protagonist characters. And we're real excited that she has a new one coming out, Slow Burn. Joe, Adam, and James once again back. And Elizabeth and Jennifer, welcome to KAZI Book Review.
Thank you so much.
Now, Elizabeth, there was a landmark Supreme Court decision in 2015, Obergefell versus Hodges, that really changed the legal environment for gay marriage. So why don't you start off with giving us an overview of that Supreme Court decision?
Well, thanks for asking. It's so hard to kind of sum up our journey to marriage equality. So it's good to start in 2015, even though it's been a long road, of course. But the very final nail in the coffin for the marriage bans federally and statewide was the 2015 Obergefell versus Hodges case. And that was the case that followed the 2013 Windsor case. The Windsor case said that the federal ban against marriage equality was unconstitutional. And, of course, shortly thereafter, it became clear that just as the federal government can't discriminate against couples seeking to legitimize their relationship under the law, states can't either. And so in 2015, any state bans that had remained that were outlawing marriage equality were taken down, declared unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court in the Obergefell case. So it was a big, big day for our country, because Texas, you guys were like us in Florida after that Windsor case in 2013, and so many people were celebrating, yay, the end of marriage discrimination and loving couples can marry. The rest of us in states where we still had marriage bans on the books were like, cool. But that doesn't help us. We still need to take down our statewide ban. So the Obergefell case was very welcome.
And, of course, the reason I asked Jennifer to come on is she has two characters that are living together, Joel and Adam, in one of her novels. And so I figured that Jennifer might want some legal advice for the situation for Joel and Adam. We do take this very seriously, but I asked Jennifer because of her experience with her novel. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Jennifer.
Sure. Elizabeth, I'm really excited about this question. So in my first novel, I Too Have Suffered in the Garden, Adam and Joel are moving in together, and the year is 2001, and that novel takes place mostly in 2005. But what I thought we could do instead is I could give you the scenario of what's going on for them, and you could tell me what would happen in 2017, what these characters would need to be looking out for if they were thinking about getting married in this very new environment. So the setting is that Joel is 29 years old, and in the year previous, he earned about $5,000. He's an artist. He's just sort of extricated himself from an abusive relationship with his father, and really has no income stream other than a little bit of artwork and waiting tables. And he's moving in with Adam, who is 35 years old and is a corporate guy and earns a good living, owns a house, has savings in retirement, and that sort of thing. Of course, in my novel, the year is 2001, and so they end up moving in together, and Adam wants to support him and support his art. What would happen in 2017 if if these men were looking to get married instead, since that option would be available to them.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. That's a great landscape to kind of think about how couples embark on the next chapter of their relationship. It's one thing that I felt so strongly about in my book, and before I do, to try to bring alive these issues by using examples of couples. In my case, I used lots of examples of couples sort of drawn from my life, my friends, my clients. So this is great to kind of think about what makes sense for Adam and Joel. So they're a couple where there's a little bit of an age disparity. Sounds like there's a bit of an income disparity. It sounds like, maybe Adam and Joel are wanting to sort of legitimize their relationship, which now they are able to do. So that's great. So now you said that Joel is the artist. Joel is the artist?
Joel is the artist, correct.
Yeah, okay, great. Okay. So I guess what's wonderful is that Joel has found somebody in Adam who does want to support his creative life, and I'm assuming that they'll come to some kind of an arrangement where Joel sort of also maybe manages the domestic sphere a little bit so that he's sort of doing his art and kind of helping the house run and while Adam is out there, you know, being a corporate guy, as you say he is. So one thing that I would suggest is that they would create some kind of like a house account. I have a chapter in Before I Do called Organizing Your Finances, and I suggest that people do like a his, mine, and ours account, so that Adam would have his income that he earns from his employment partially go to that separate account, but then also that they create a joint account, so that that account that they have together is what would remain would manage their daily expenses, groceries, going out to dinner, all of that. But that Adam would still have that a little bit of a nest egg for himself. If the relationship doesn't work out, we want to make sure that he doesn't give it all up. Certainly, if they were to marry, I would want to see them do some kind of prenuptial agreement. And it doesn't have to be that kind of standard prenuptial agreement that you always think of a prenuptial agreement being like, you know, everything that we come into the marriage with is what we leave with, no more, no less, and, you know, no spousal support, all of that. Because certainly we would want to make sure that if they split up, that Joel, the artist, is not left with no assets and no income. But we would also want to limit Adam's exposure, right? I mean, we don't want Joel to be able to walk away with what the law probably we don't want him to walk away with half of everything that was earned in the marriage and half of all of the assets that accumulated in the marriage. You know, that might be not exactly what this particular couple thinks is fair. It may not be what Adam could live with if the relationship doesn't work out. So I would say that they should organize their finances in a way that they're not nickel and diming each other every day. They have they have their separate accounts, then they have their joint accounts, but also that if they want to be together in marriage, that they do think about some kind of a prenuptial agreement so that there's limited exposure, really, for each of them. I mean, I think, you never know. Maybe Joel's art career really takes off and he doesn't want, you know, to have Adam clawing at his intellectual property. So that can happen, too.
Oh, Elizabeth, I so wish that you had been able to give Joel and Adam advice before they moved in together.
Oh, okay.
This is great.
It's as you know, Joel and Adam are not unlike most people in my life, most clients who come to me way too late. So many people have said to me as I've traveled the country with this book, I wish I would have read that sooner. So yes. You, Jennifer, have a even more creative lament, which is I wish my clients would have read this sooner. So that's great.
Yes.
I mean, my clients, excuse me, my characters. Yes. Sorry, my characters.
May I complicate the situation for you?
Sure.
Okay. So at one point, Adam is desperate to adopt a child. And Joel is not so sure about it, but they're kind of playing around with the idea. What advice would you have for a couple that might wanted to adopt?
Well, gosh, that's a tough one because I do a lot of adoption and surrogacy in my practice. And I will tell you that adoption is a difficult road. You know, there's this sort of myth that there's all these healthy unwanted children out there. You know, it's difficult, and it's especially challenging for people who have any kind of limitation on what the child is going to, if they want a newborn, if they want a Caucasian child. It could be really challenging for people. So I always try to tell them, if Joel and Adam come to me, I try to encourage them to be as open as they can be, as open to not adopting a newborn, to not adopting a particular race or a particular gender. I see lots of same-sex couples who have a gender preference. So that is for sure one thing. But let's say that they are fortunate enough and they're open-minded and open-hearted enough to find a child, to take that child into their home. It is critically important that they do an adoption where they are both the legal parents of the child, that they not just rely on if they're lucky enough to get themselves both on the birth certificate at birth for whatever they show the vital statistics officer in the hospital, if they show them their agreements and everything or whatever, and they say, okay, we'll put you both on the birth certificate as parents. It is still critically important, no matter what procedure they do, surrogacy, adoption, whatever, that they have a court order that says you are both the legal parents of the child. That way they are protected anywhere they go in the world. A birth certificate is, as we say, sort of the diploma. The court order is the transcript. You know, you want to have that proof that would be given full faith and credit anywhere you go that this child is the legal child of both of yours, because we're seeing lots of judges all over the country who are not honoring birth certificates where a couple is, married couple is both on the birth certificate. So really important. And of course, even more important in this particular moment in our nation, where I think we can all agree that there have been lots of discrimination and lots of bigots who've been emboldened, and lots of discrimination that seems to be sort of finding its way into being validated, unfortunately. So I would say they should be open, and they should do everything they can do under the law to protect themselves as parents.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Elizabeth Schwartz. She's the author of Before I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay and Otherwise. And I'm joined by local author Jennifer Fritz. Now, Elizabeth, if someone's already been living together for a while, or there are legal issues they need to consider if they've already been together for a while without being married, to consider if they're considering getting married?
Your question is, are there particular issues people need to think about if they've been living together for a long time and they're thinking about getting married?
Right. Are there any particular issues they should be thinking about? And should they get married?
Yeah, definitely. There are a whole bunch of issues. I mean, first of all, I'll just say that one of the most important things to think about if you're thinking about getting married is really to run the numbers. And I know that doesn't sound very romantic, so I'm sorry, you're talking to a lawyer. That's my approach, and I've seen lots of folks who haven't run the numbers and they're surprised. And what I mean by that is, first of all, talk to your tax preparer. Find out what exactly your taxes are going to be if you get married. Because for some people, there's a marriage penalty. And for other people, there's a marriage bonus, which means that your income taxes could radically change depending on your household income. Also, in terms of numbers, if you're getting any government benefits at all, like literally, there are benefits that the government gives that are means-based. There are Medicare, Medicaid, certain Social Security benefits that change if you get married. So you want to know what those benefits will look like for you if you decide to get married, and that's just incredibly important. I've got clients who were, one of them was a veteran, and he was getting his prescription drugs through the VA, and then he married his partner of 42 years and just didn't even think about it, didn't even give it any thought that he actually would lose his prescription drug benefit because the household income went up. such that his he no longer qualified to receive that benefit. So so those are some of the things I think about. And then, you know, certainly I would also have good, open, honest conversation about what would happen in the event of divorce, what would happen in the event of death. And I can't believe how many people really get married and they don't even have that conversation. I mean, you're just so sort of swept up in the romance of it that maybe you don't think about, like, let's be really honest, how would we want things to look in the event of death, in the event of disability, in the event of divorce. I call those the three big D's: death, disability, and divorce. And just be honest and talk about it. What do you think would be fair? What do you expect? So, and then I guess the other thing is just in terms of conversation, in terms of communication, I have a chapter I'm, like, particularly proud of called Starting Out, and it's got about 15 questions. Well, of course, I'm a lawyer, so there's a lot of sub questions and compound questions, but lots of questions about what would be what's the answer to all of these important things that really you ought to be communicating about. So, you know, before you really dig in deeper with somebody, before you get married, I think really before you even move in together, you know, where do you want to retire? Who else do you want to benefit from your estate at our death? Do you want kids? How do you want kids? I mean, these are all really important questions. I mean, I can't believe how many people come to my office. They don't know until I ask how much their partner, their fiancé, their spouse earns, how much debt they have. I mean, these are, like, seems like pretty basic things to know about somebody that you're making a life with. So I have a list of those questions in that Starting Out chapter that I think are really great for any couple.
Before there was marriage equality, I know that there were certain things that partners would do to try to get their partner some of the benefits of being a spouse. Are there any particular things, loopholes that would utilize that gay partners use that would make it particularly thorny to withdraw from to get married?
Well, I guess lots of estate planning techniques are in some ways sort of predicated on a couple not being able to marry. So I know that I did a lot of estate planning documents where, you know, the understanding is that this couple was never going to be, we just thought we were never going to have legal marriage in our lifetime, you know, we just really never, it's not anything I think any of us expected. And so, you know, we did a lot of estate planning arrangements where there would be, like, annual gifts and not, you know, not taking advantage of their rights to hand money over tax-free to a spouse. So I don't want to say that those are difficult to get out of because, you know, for the most part, estate planning documents are revocable, unless they're irrevocable. For the most part, they're revocable. So, but certainly there have been things that folks have put in place to take advantage of charitable deductions and the like, where now they're more able to take care of a spouse using, you know, these various techniques. So I have seen people come back who have, you know, more complicated estates, who are doing more sophisticated estate planning. I've definitely seen people come back and say, all right, now that we can get married, you know, let's take advantage of these different spousal benefits that we can use.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. I do have one more question for you. As a storyteller, I tend to make sense of my world through story, and I would love to hear if you have sort of a cautionary tale, you know, something that's happened to you in your work where you think, oh, if I had just been able to give this person advice, everything would have changed for them.
Do we have another, like, hour or two on air?
If you can't tell, Elizabeth, we're actually going to take the full time. I've kind of jettisoned the other interview I plan to run. So
there you go. Who needs them? This is important stuff.
Exactly.
Thank you. My gosh, Jennifer, so many things do I wish. I mean, so many times I wish I could have gotten to somebody sooner. You know, it's one of the reasons, and I know that I have colleagues there in Austin who feel the same way I do, lawyer colleagues who feel the same way I do, which is that, you know, like, whatever I can do to make this affordable for you, to make it accessible for you, I want to do it, because I have so many times over the years have had folks who didn't get an estate plan together, who didn't do an adoption, you know, and it's always my fear that they say, oh, I couldn't afford it. And so I'll always work with people and be real flexible, and I know most of my other colleagues who do work with LGBT families and you know, and all kinds of lawyers will be flexible that way. But I mean, my gosh, right now I have a few cases sitting in my file cabinet that are heartbreaking cases where it's a lesbian couple who didn't protect themselves with respect to the child that they brought into the relationship. And then, instead of honoring the relationship between non-biological mother and child, the biological mother or initial adoptive parent, if it wasn't a biological birth but an adoption, and they only did the adoption in the name of one parent because that's all the law would allow in that moment. We have just lots of awful cases where those women are just sort of like, okay, well, it was great while we were together for you to be the parent of this child, but, you know, now you're kind of cramping my style and I want to move on. Mm-hmm. So I just wish that more of those non-legal parents had protected themselves and done an adoption and solidified their parental right to their child. And I'll tell you, like, in almost every case, the answer really, sometimes it's we couldn't afford it. But for the most part, when they haven't done it, it's because they trusted. They trusted. Oh, I trusted her. She would never, I just never thought she would ever do this. Why would she take my child away from me? And those are just heartbreaking cases. And, you know, we see these cases also often, so often. I mean, in my practice, I can't tell you how many times I've seen folks who just didn't do an estate plan. They just thought everything would be fine. And then tragedy strikes, and the family of the decedent comes and kicks the surviving spouse out and says, okay, well, that's it. Thanks for everything. I had one case. Couple been together 23 years, and the family of the spouse who passed away suddenly, you know, who my guy called them mom and dad, you know, his in-laws, they, during the service, the memorial service for this poor guy's husband, they came in, cleaned the house out, changed the locks, took everything. And the guy was like, oh, my God, I just, you know, like, I never thought it would happen. I didn't think we had much by way. I mean, they didn't have much, but they took what he had. I mean, everything. They took, like, his tool kit. They took all his music collection. I mean, just crazy, petty stuff. So it's just really important. And even though now, you know, there is marriage equality, it's really important still to have all those documents in place. As we know, living in red states, you know, even if the law is on the side of equality, lots of times individuals, especially recently emboldened individuals, are gonna challenge that and make life difficult. And you know, have your healthcare surrogate on you just because your wife is your wife and your legal wife, and you could have a nurse who's like, hey, show me your marriage license. We've been hearing that a lot lately. Show me your marriage license. Well, I don't know. Do you carry around your heterosexual marriage license, you know what I mean? It's just like kind of crazy.
Right.
So we tell people it's just real important to still be sure and have your will and your living will and your health care surrogate, all that stuff, because if you're in that moment, your partner's in the hospital, your spouse in the hospital, you don't want to have to prove your legal relationship. Just have your documents available.
Well, we only have about 2 minutes left, but I did want to close with asking you, do you think with the change in the Congress, the Senate, the presidency, is there any threat we should be aware of to marriage equality?
I guess I'm a little Pollyanna about that. I don't think that, I think marriage equality is here to stay, and mostly because the Supreme Court has, as we talked about at the top of our time together, issued two fantastic, really solid decisions that are very well-reasoned. Providing for the freedom to marry. Marriage is a fundamental right. So I don't think we have anything to worry about with respect to marriage equality. I think that there could be the erosion of some rights around it, like some of these crazy Religious Freedom Restoration Act issues. So, you know, pre-order your wedding cake and order your florist and your photographer, because they could be making a case that they shouldn't have to serve you. I think we're okay with marriage equality. I think there's plenty we have to worry about in the LGBT community and the broader community of fair-minded people. I don't think the right to marry is going to be one of them.
Elizabeth Schwartz, author of Before I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay and Otherwise, thanks for being a guest on KAZI Book Review.
Thanks, Hopeton, and thanks, Jennifer. Good luck with your work.
Oh, thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Thanks. Talking to you, too.
Bye.
Take care, guys.
And Jennifer, thank you so much for being a co-host of this interview with Elizabeth Schwartz. What's your website address?
It's Jennifer Ritz. The last name is HRITZ.com.
And your next book, Slow Burn, coming out hopefully sometime this year or next year?
Absolutely. I'm really excited about that book. It's going to be a good one.
All right. Thanks for helping with our KZI Book Review today.
Thank you.